Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 544, E3 2016 and Halo Wars 2 beta recap, recorded live on June 23rd, 2016. Hello everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Duststorm.
I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we are back after a two or three week hiatus, actually. We took off for the Halo Bowl week, and then we took off for E3 week, as we got to, or at least I got to go out and play some Halo Wars and get some interviews and look at some other cool E3 stuff. And everyone else at home got to play the Halo Wars beta.
And I'm still jealous.
Why? Did you not play much of the Halo Wars beta?
No, because I didn't get to go to E3.
Oh, well, that's... Yeah. You're not the only one for that one, at least. So we have quite a few things to talk about. First, obviously, is the Halo Wars 2 beta, which was technically supposed to be done today, but is actually... yesterday, as of this recording, since we record on Thursdays. But it's still going on, apparently. There's a big 4 gig update today, and from the looks of it, people on Twitter were still saying they were able to find games, and I had a couple people looking to play, and I launched up the game, and it looks like the playlist is still there, so I don't know if they just hadn't turned off the Switch yet, or if it's something that they secretly extended it again so people could keep on playing it through this weekend. I don't know, but anyways, needless to say, Halo Wars 2 beta looks like it's still playable. So if you're listening to this live, and maybe afterwards you can hop on some games, or I don't know,
I must have missed an update, because mine's currently updating is 13.28 gigabytes.
That sounds like the base install.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on, because I was playing it yesterday.
Well, you mentioned earlier before we started the podcast that you were trying to download the update and then it crashed your Xbox, so maybe it corrupted the install and now it's trying to fix the install.
Could be. I like... You're part of the preview program, right, Dust?
Yes.
I like how they actually have a progress on download now.
Yeah, that was so cool. That was one of the things that is really awesome to see, and I really like how they lay out the new... how they lay out the apps and the games, and then they broke out the ready to install to a separate new thing as well. Everything in the My Games and Apps thing is a whole lot better. They really did a good job improving that.
Oh, yeah. They definitely... And it's gotten better, even better since they've released it. When they first released it, I was having problems with the ready-to-install not showing up. But they fixed that. And now the query shows up really quickly, showing me the games that I need to install. And keep in mind, I only have 2 games that are... technically ready to install, or 3 games, sorry. So it's not like it's a list of 20. And somehow, somewhere, I bought a FIFA game, but I don't remember buying it. Either that or it's a beta, or FIFA 16. I don't know. Anyway, it's in my ready to install list. So, but yeah, the new dashboard update I'm really enjoying.
Yeah, me too. I was thinking, too, after that, when I was taking my shower before the podcast, of how far the dashboard has actually come since the launch of the console.
Well, yeah. You know, I expected changes to come to the dashboard.
Me too. But I just expected the progress.
Yeah, they've made huge strides in speeding up the UI, making it easier to get the things you want quickly. I actually have gotten to the point with the dashboard has gotten to the point where I'm actually using one with a set top box in our bedroom, you know, for a TV, you know, and I'm piping the TV through the Xbox, and it works really good. It's very responsive. Their voice commands don't do well when there's noise in the room, like a fan or anything. So, but that's to be expected. That one's not signed up for the preview program, so I haven't been able to try Cortana out on that one. But I played with Cortana a little bit on my main Xbox, and she seems to work really well. It's a lot more responsive than when the Xbox commands. She interprets it like gamer tags. You know gamer tags.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah, there's some crazy gamer tags that people make.
As long as it sounds similar to what it's spelt like, she hasn't had a problem finding one yet.
So did they do the conversion for like numbers as letters and letters as numbers and symbols as numbers, that kind of stuff too?
Well, there's some that she has troubles with. There, you know, whenever you get one like that, you need to look at real name. If that person shares it, if not, then you just have to manually select them. But I was really surprised at how well she does with gamer tags.
That's awesome.
For being what, you know, from voice commands past history.
Right. I've never used them on Xbox One because I take the back. I used it at the beginning when I had my Kinect plugged in for maybe 2 weeks or so, but I never had my Kinect plugged in after that. So the thing I like, I don't really use voice commands.
Well, the thing I like was with this update, you can use your headset. Whenever you're playing, you usually get your headset on anyway, so...
Nice! So they finally got smart and allowed you to do that.
Right. You can control... Wow. Yeah, you can control your Xbox through your headset. You don't have to... you don't have to have a Kinect connected to it. I haven't tried to record that. I haven't tried to record that or take a screenshot yet, because I haven't thought about it.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. That's what I was going to ask, was about the recording screenshots.
But... I can just imagine that in the middle of a game. Hey, Cortana!
Record that! Oh, so do you actually call it out via Cortana instead of saying Xbox now?
Yeah. Hey, Cortana becomes the new command instead of Xbox. Which is really funny. I actually had to turn that off on my computer because, you know, I've got a headset I keep plugged into my computer all times. And then I have one that whenever I'm chatting on the Xbox I use. And I'll get a response on my computer and my Xbox at the same time.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that would be a problem.
So I didn't even realize I had it turned on the computer. So I had to turn it off on the computer. I don't talk to my computer that much anyway.
I don't have Cortana turned on because I don't do my Microsoft account integrated in with my Windows. Because I like my PCs to have their own separate logon that's not tied to my Microsoft account. Because, you know, I like a little bit of layered security.
No, I totally understand. I've set up my father that way. He is completely offline when it comes to the operating system. I've even downloaded the SpyBot software to disable all the little things that they put in Windows 10.
It would be one thing if you could use, and I know we haven't even gotten onto the Halo talk yet, so sorry, folks, but I wish you could sign into your Microsoft account after you create your user account for your computer, and basically whenever you log into your user account, you have your Microsoft account associated with it. So you could still use your Microsoft account for all of the Microsoft ID enabled apps, but it's still not your login credentials from your Microsoft account.
Honestly, on a desktop, the apps are almost irritating. They are a lot more touch friendly than they are mouse and keyboard friendly. That's one reason I was kind of irritated to hear my tweets wasn't going to support their standalone app anymore.
Wait, the what?
The TweetDeck, sorry. They used to have a standalone program or application that you could run on a Windows computer.
For Windows, yeah.
And they no longer support that.
Yep, you have to do it in the browser.
So I either have to open a browser window or use the Twitter application in Windows 10, which
I do both, actually. I have the Twitter app for my personal account so I can get the notifications bar to hit those. And then I have TweetDeck up in Firefox, along with all my other stuff that I run.
Yeah. What I've started doing is I've got a little tablet that sits right in front of me that I use for when I'm screaming so I can keep an eye on the chat.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And I'll just put the TweetDeck website up there. I just wish I could resize the columns. But back to Halo news.
Yeah, back to
Halo news. Talking about tangent. Halo Wars 2 beta. I loved it for the most part.
So before we get back on track real quick, it is not quite as tangential as you might think because of the whole, what's the program called? The Play Anywhere program. So now all you have all the Xbox titles from kind of here on out playable on Xbox and Windows 10. So it's not completely tangential.
I will believe it when I see it. Fair enough. A lot of games I can see going on both platforms. Halo, I still question.
It seems like they're making a first party push. So Halo 6 looks like it might be back on PC. Granted, it'd be nice if, right, might be. But it looks like if they're really trying to push the whole first party Xbox Play Anywhere thing, then we are going to see Halo 6 on PC.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if MCC would be able to be fixed and put it on the PC, because a lot of PC players would really like that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I would hope that they would bring, if they're going to start pushing the Halo games to PC as well, bring Halo 5, bring Master Chief Collection over to PC. That's one of the things that I like. Yeah, I would like to be able to do. I would like to be able to bring my Halo with me without lugging around an Xbox, a TV, a controller, power brick, everything. And with the new Xbox Slim, it would be a lot easier, but even still, it would be nice to be able to keep it all contained into my laptop. Because whenever I travel, my laptop goes with me just so I can keep on top of monies and emails and stuff like that. So,
Monies.
You know, like when I go on vacation, make sure I don't run out of money.
What's monies for?
Monies by fun.
That is true.
It would be nice to see all the Halo games, well, at least all the Xbox One Halo games come to PC. And I know there's a bunch of people out there screaming, Halo 3 PC! I would love to see it as well. The original Halo 3 brought to PC.
I was talking to a few people at E3, and it may have been the New Zealand Xbox community guy, or maybe someone else at the Halo meetup. Anyways, it would be cool if there is still thoughts about Halo 3 anniversary, which it's been rumored. I don't think it's going to be something that's coming, but in case there is, maybe the Halo 3 anniversary would be something that would be specific for PC.
It's possible.
Not necessarily for console, because 360, Xbox Live, that's still supported.
True.
Granted, I don't know how many people play on Halo 3 on Xbox 360, but it's still technically supported. Unlike Halo CE and Halo 2, where it was, the original Xbox Live is no longer supported, so people want to still play it, so make their anniversary, whatever.
Yeah. We've got the whole Halo Online thing that we have yet to hear anything more about.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was just a test to see if there was a market there for it or what. You know, maybe not overseas, but there's definitely a market here for it. The fact that people are still playing, you know, a hacked copy of it.
Yeah.
Or a cracked copy of it shows that. But I don't know. I would just like to be able to have my Halo in a convenient package to take with me.
Agreed. It would be really convenient, really nice, and be able to play it with anyone else with PC. I mean, that's really, PC is more portable than an Xbox. Even with the new Xbox One Slim, it's still more portable than, and you get better graphics quality out of a gaming laptop if that's what you're taking. And you're probably looking at, well, I guess the Slim might be a little bit lighter, but then you have the power brick now that's in it, so maybe not so much. But anyways, your laptop,
it's more cumbersome. because, you know, a laptop, you just put on the desk, you open it up, you plug in your controller or play with mouse and keyboard, if that's your choice, and you're ready to go. When the battery gets low, you plug it into the wall.
Yep.
You know, and I'm not talking about online play. I'm just talking about, I'd like to be able to just jump into campaign or something and play against the computer, fire up ODST and run through some rounds of firefight, you know, stuff like that. There's, you know, because when I'm traveling, you know, internet connections aren't always that reliable, like RTX.
That was probably some of the worst internet, because there were even points where it was slower than dial-up.
Oh, yeah. I was getting a better internet connection on my phone, and I didn't even pay for any data.
Well, I remember we were jerry-rigging it back and forth between the internet from the property and then the hotspot on my phone, I think. If I remember right.
No, I don't think I think you were using your hotspot on your phone to upload the podcast. I don't think we had the Xbox connected to it.
The first night we were trying to get connected up, I thought we were using it.
I wasn't there, so I can't attest to that.
Anywho. So yeah, needless to say, even with having everything on PC, it would be nice to get all that available. And I don't think it would ever be crossplay between some of, like, if we have an older Halo title, I don't think it'd ever be crossplay. But if the whole play anywhere thing kind of holds true for first party titles, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Halo 6 be a crossplay title between PC and console.
I would not be surprised at all, because that seems to be what they're pushing, is to be able to, you know, buy the game once, whether it be on Xbox or on PC, and be able to play it both places and be able to play people on both infrastructures. Well, I guess it actually becomes the same infrastructure. You know, you will be able to play on Xbox Live, whether you're at your Xbox or on your computer, which, I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And I like the fact that they finally put Bluetooth in a controller.
Yeah. So I actually got to talk with Aaron Greenberg about the new hardware and the controllers and the new services and all that stuff. So we did get an interview. Unfortunately, I didn't have time to get it edited before tonight. There are two other interviews, but we'll probably stick that interview with Aaron Greenberg into this podcast somewhere. But I asked him about the Bluetooth functionality, being able to connect to other devices like Android, iOS, and because some of those you can actually connect them in and have them as a gamepad and use them as a gamepad. And he said they've only functionally tested it with Windows 10 devices. So there might be devices, other devices that it's compatible with, but there's no guarantees right now.
I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody write Android drivers for it.
So the way he talked about it made it sound like they're using standard Bluetooth protocols. And with a lot of those protocols, you have a standard set of, like, you have the calling over Bluetooth, you have the text messages over Bluetooth, you have the contact sharing over Bluetooth, and file sharing, and now game controllers, and all that kind of stuff. So it's one of those things where if there's a standard for it, I'm guessing there shouldn't be any reason why it shouldn't work on other devices to a degree, but I don't know enough about Bluetooth technology to say one way or the other.
Yeah, basically what I was saying is they just, you know, need to write the software to allow the Android device to be able to understand what the button pushes mean.
Right.
So
I don't know if that's if those buttons are standardized over Bluetooth or if that is a custom driver set.
I would bet it's custom. We are talking about Microsoft.
Well, they're the one that's pioneering open standard applications on all the software and hardware that they're using.
All their software and their hardware. You know, as long as you're within the Windows ecosystem.
I guess.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The Office 365 thing, you know, to be able to get it on your Android and your iOS devices and, you know, all this other stuff that they're doing is great. But from what I've seen, they nerfed the function of those to a point. You know, to get the full Office package, you need to be on a Windows PC.
Well, they have Office for Mac.
Yeah, I guess I should quantify this. I'm talking on the mobile devices.
They have Office for Android and iOS that's for free. I mean, granted, you don't get to use all the functionality of a desktop application, but you still can open and edit.
Yeah, you can open and edit. You can still use it, but you don't have full access to the entire set of tools in, you know, Excel and Word, PowerPoint, things like that.
Right. That's when you use the online version, the 0365 version.
Yeah, through the Office Online, even that is limited.
So I haven't used it, but from what I heard, it's supposed to be like fully functional for the online version. Not the free online version, but the paid online version is fully functional.
Yeah, the free online version is what I was talking about. The paid online version, yeah. The one you rent every month, yeah, it's full. It's a full version of Office.
Anyways, back to Halo.
Back to Halo.
Because we've spent, I think, the majority of this podcast so far talking about Windows.
Nothing.
No, we've been talking about something, just other things.
Not what we're supposed to be talking about.
So, I guess since we were talking about it, Xbox Play Anywhere was announced during the Xbox press briefing. And the first title that's going to be kind of a huge part of that, which also features crossplay, is Gears of War 4. So you'll be able to buy that once on either Xbox or PC, and you'll get it on the other platform for free. And you'll be able to sync your cloud saves. You'll be able to sync your achievements, share screenshots and videos all in the same manner that you would do through the Xbox app on PC or through your Xbox One. And you'll also be able to play cross-platform. So you'll be able to be on PC and play Xbox One players and vice versa.
And when they announced that, I heard this really faint scream. I think it was Haas. Anyway.
Too bad he's not in the chat tonight. But yeah, that would make sense.
I'm kind of hoping he listens to the podcast. But I think it'll be interesting to see how that works. To see how functional it is, especially the crossplay.
I would imagine it wouldn't be that difficult because everything's running on the Azure cloud.
Well, no, I meant as far as, you know, the whole PC against console.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to see the data from that, because that if Halo 6 does support cross-platform, I think it'd give us a good insight as to what to expect from Halo 6.
Honestly, if Halo 6 was on PC, I would be switching over to PC in an instant.
Yeah.
I would totally be on the PC platform.
I probably won't. I don't know. I will probably own it on both, but as far as playing traditional PC, you know, with keyboard and mouse, I doubt I will do that because my fingers don't work that way.
Even without the mouse and keyboard, you plug in a controller, you still have all the Xbox controls on the PC version, and you get so much higher fidelity graphics and sound.
Well, I mean, as far as a competitive advantage.
Yeah, you can see better. There's your competitive advantage. Even if you had the same controller, you have better graphics, you can see better on a PC.
But, like I said, you know, my laptop is not a gaming laptop. It is a...
For now.
No, I invested enough in this laptop. It'll live until I'll have it until it dies. Don't get me wrong. I seriously thought about buying one of the Razors. The pricing was pretty similar to what I purchased, but I looked at it and I'm like, I don't really game on my laptop. And the games I do play don't require that much as far as graphics. So I think it will be satisfactory for me. Yes, I won't be able to play it 4K, but hey, as long as I can get my 720 and 60 frames per second, I'll be good.
Fair enough. So along with the Xbox Play Anywhere, we had the new console that got announced, the Xbox One S, as basically being slim, which is 40% smaller, and it's actually pretty small. Got to see it up on one of the displays on the show floor, and it was... You could definitely tell it was sizably smaller.
Yeah, I saw a video of one sitting on top of an original Xbox, and I'm like, Wow.
Yeah.
You don't get 40% until it's staring you in the face. That's a lot.
And the other thing on top of that, too, is that 40% also has the power brick that you usually have to lug around with you integrated into the console.
We're back to the original Xbox form factor.
Right.
You just have a cord you plug into the back of the Xbox and then plug it in the wall and you're done.
Yay.
Yay.
And there was much rejoicing. Yay.
The only thing, and I hope they bring this out. I haven't seen anything on it. I hope they have it available in black.
Me too. I was saying that during the whole expo. I would buy it if it was black.
Because everything else in my entertainment center is black.
Exactly.
Well, except for my green Halo 3 Xbox 360. Hey.
Even still, that goes with a dark theme, whereas the white's just like, no.
Here I am!
No. Right. So, that was another question I actually asked Aaron Greenberg about, and he said they wanted to differentiate the console, so they made it white.
Well, I can understand that. You know, the fact that it's almost half the size of the original doesn't differentiate it enough. Make it a dark blue, then.
Dark blue? That would be weird.
I'm hoping that later generations of it do start to come in black. And, you know, for the initial launch, I can kind of understand the whole different, you know, wanting to stand out, but that's a lot of standout.
So every console for Xbox, minus special editions, and I think same thing for PlayStation, has always been some kind of grayscale color. And kind of for Nintendo, too. Except for the GameCube. The GameCube default was purple.
Well, yeah.
But I think every other console since then has been some kind of grayscale color. So I don't think we'd ever get really a colored console.
Well, I guess what I could do is just mask everything off and get me some flat black paint and paint it.
Yeah. Yeah, you could technically do that, I guess. You'd have to take all the covers off and want to paint the holes. Yeah, avoid the warranty. Yeah. But,
yeah, I mean, the Xbox Slim, I really like what they're doing. I hope it's as reliable as the Xbox Ones have proven to be. You know, no red ring or whatever the Xbox One version of it is. Because whenever you start packaging things in smaller boxes, they tend to get hot.
Yeah. So
I hope they've really done their homework on the heat management of the Xbox.
I was honestly surprised to still see a disk drive in there.
Maybe the next generation. I mean, there's still a lot of people that, you know, because GameFly is a thing.
Well, no. So, I mean, like, you have the original Xbox, which is now $279 for the 500 gig model. And you have the Slim, which is $299. Why not, for the Slim, get rid of the disk drive?
Because they still want people to be able to play Blu-rays and still be able to do things like GameFly. I know people that they game for fun. They don't game to be competitive. You know, they're more interested in their gamer score than they are being competitive. And so they subscribe to GameFly because they want to go through a lot of games. They want to play a lot of different games. And digital download is inconvenient because, you know, they haven't got a good system where you can rent games that way yet. Now, if they ever come up with a good way to rent games in a digital format like they do movies, then I can see the disc drives going away.
Right. I think it would be cool. Well, not necessarily cool, but I think it would be nice to have a console version, whether it's the Slim, which, I mean, they have the Slim now, but have a console version that doesn't have the disc drive. So for people that pretty much buy exclusively digital, aka me, and likely other people out there, the disc drive is another $30 cut off of the console. So give me a Slim that's $269.99, and I'd be happy. That'd be a perfect travel console.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Or you could always just buy one, take the disc drive out, put it in the custom case.
I'm not, who is he, Andrew Heck?
Oh, come on.
I'm not that technically savvy.
I'm still waiting for him to take an Xbox One and, you know, put it in a briefcase.
That would be cool.
He did put one behind a TV, so it's like a big iPad.
Nice.
Put it on the back of like a 27-inch TV.
Cool.
It's like just thinking, 4 inches thick.
But I'm just thinking, you take the disk drive out of the Slim now, that's another, what, 25% of that console?
Well, that all depends on if the board does not extend under the drive.
Well, it probably does, but you could make different boards that attach, instead of horizontally on the bottom, vertically.
Yeah, there's, you know, 100 ways. Yeah, there's 100 ways to do it, but they still have to be cost effective with it. And doing a whole lot of custom, you know, multiple custom boards costs more money than just putting a disk drive in it. But how about Project Scorpio?
Yeah, that
the rumor. Big boy
that we don't even really know much about yet.
Okay, theories.
Yeah, very much theories. So the Scorpio was announced as Microsoft's new innovative, still part of the Xbox One family somehow, VR solution to gaming. So Sony has theirs, the PlayStation VR, there's the HTC Vive, there is the Oculus Rift, there's another one that I'm forgetting, and those are all kind of the major contenders in the VR space. And Microsoft is going to be joining that next year with Project Scorpio, which is still an Xbox One, apparently.
Yeah, well, this is their, I don't want to say PC equivalent, but PC challenger, Xbox. I don't know that this is going to be true, but with the advancements in USB 3.0 and FireWire, it is very likely, well, somewhat likely, that this Xbox may have some upgradable hardware. I don't know that they'll do that.
That would be kind of a pioneer in the console space.
Because, you know, the technology is there now, and this is totally hypothetical. The technology is there now that you can actually basically plug a video card into a port on a laptop and have full desktop graphics.
To an extent,
granted. But the technology is still improving.
Right.
I mean, yes, you're not going to be pushing 4K through a USB 3.0 port yet.
No. but could see something along the lines of that, I think, if they future-proofed the motherboard, but it would have to be an expensive motherboard. And usually it's the motherboards where companies will cut the costs.
Like I said, the way this sounds so far, this is going to be the high-end console. I would not be surprised to see this one go for $599 or more.
Like the PS 4.5?
This is not going to be a budget console. This is going to be for the people that are very serious about their games or want to run VR. You know, you probably will be able to build a PC for the price that you can get this Xbox for.
I could see that, yeah.
I mean, it's going to be interesting when they release more details, because I really want to know.
I know. We just want so much.
The upgrade thing, that would be a neat trick, because that would extend the life of the console. You spend, well, you know, $600-$700 on a console, and in 5 years, the games have pushed so far that this console is now having trouble rendering the graphics. You can buy for $400 a graphics upgrade or a video card upgrade. The only problem with that is the games are going to have to be dynamic and know what kind of system they're playing on.
Yep, and it's going to have to be compatible with the base hardware that is sold with the Scorpio, if that's the case, of course.
Which, I mean, PCs do, you know, PC gaming's been doing it for years. You can alter what the game runs at as far as video. You know, how high of a quality, how many frames per second, what resolution. You can change all that in a PC game. So,
right, but
kind of makes me wonder. Also, well, it but, also makes. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say that also takes a lot of additional development, though, to be able to support different types of graphical enhancements, different types of graphics cards, and all that stuff. So it's the console, you're coding to one specific standard, whereas for graphics, you are coding for many, many additional variables.
On PC. On a console, where you can only buy hardware from the manufacturer of the console, they can control that to where they only have to develop for, you know, a limited number of hardware.
Well, and I guess too, if there is the whole Xbox Play Anywhere thing, you're going to have the games on the computer anyways. So I guess those games will not automatically, but they'll be built in those capabilities to dynamically change with whatever graphics power, I guess, the Scorpio might have at the time.
That's entirely possible. Or it could be on the consoles. You buy the game. Say you have an original Xbox One. You buy the game. You play it for a little while. You buy whatever they call the Project Scorpio. You download the game or install the game on that. And it says, oh, hey, wait a minute. You've got a graphics upgrade, and downloads an update to update the graphics on the game. To give it the coding to be able to run on this higher end software or higher end hardware.
So on the PC, that's always been up to the graphics driver to provide those updates. And then it has hooks that the program can use to integrate in with the graphics drivers. I don't see why they would change that architecture for a console.
Well, since the console world's a whole different, but who knows?
But consoles are becoming more and more like PCs every generation. Mm-hmm. So it just doesn't make sense.
Since the Xbox One, they've been PCs. Just low-end PCs.
Well, PS3 was more PC
than 360. Since the original Xbox One, or the original Xbox, they've been PCs.
I thought you were talking about Xbox One.
No, the original Xbox. The first Xbox. I mean, it was off-the-shelf PC parts. That's how they built the thing. They literally just pushed a bunch of PC parts in a box, wrote a custom operating system for it, and sold it.
And here we are, nearly 15 years later.
And that's the one thing I've always liked about the Xbox.
Halo CE turns 15 this year.
Yes, it does.
Whoa. Where's Halo Fest? where's Halo Fest 2? Yeah, because I don't count the MCC Halo Fest.
Yeah. I really am excited to hear more about Project Scorpio. I'm keeping my ear out for any little hints or anything. I'm not taking any of it for fact until I get it confirmed by Microsoft. But there are a lot of possibilities for this console. So start saving your pennies now, boys and girls.
Right. All right, so what else do we have? We have
Halo Wars 2.
We've heard about Halo Wars, but we finally got an official trailer to it, which looks freaking cool.
My favorite part is when the Warthog runs over the Brute. Sorry, I'm just demented that way. Somebody needs to turn that into a GIF.
It's probably already out there. I bet someone on Reddit's probably already done it.
Probably. I'll have to look for it.
If not, someone can go make it pretty quick, I'm sure.
But yeah, I like the way they did the trailer. You have, with the two leaders just walking up to each other. It's kind of hard to put into words the feelings that it brings up. But the whole tone, it's kind of gives you this epic battle moment.
Uh-huh.
As they're approaching each other.
It really does. And that was one of the things during the interview with, I think it was actually in the Halo Wars 2 demo. Because at E3, you could actually, for media people, and I was fortunate enough to get in there, but they had a demo of the first campaign mission. And Dan Ayoub was in there and discussing how the campaign was going. And they talked about the trailer and how they wanted to set the attitude where you have Captain Cutter, and then I don't remember what rank he is, but Atriox the Brute on the other side, basically being able to like strategize and like see the battle at a very macro level, so you're able to kind of, they're able to walk through the battlefield and assess it like more quickly than things are actually happening. So that was kind of the whole point of them being able to walk through slow-mo stuff around them. So it was really cool of him actually discussing the concept of how they made the trailer and why they made the trailer. And it might actually be in the trailer BTS video that Halo put up on their YouTube channel as well, that they discussed it. But it was really cool to just hear how they put it together. They obviously have Blur back on the team who did the original cutscenes for Halo Wars, and they did it for Halo 2 Anniversary and for Halo 5. So they're back again doing it for Halo Wars 2, which is awesome. I think, hands down, Blur has been kind of the best thing that's happened to Halo as far as cinematics goes.
Yeah. If they ever do somebody else, they better knock it out of the park, or there's going to be heads rolling. Blur is absolutely phenomenal at doing that CG stuff.
They've done such a fantastic job.
Even when, you know, when Halo Wars originally launched, the quality of those cutscenes, and look how far the technology has gotten now.
And those cutscenes were baller back in the day.
They still are. I still love watching those cutscenes.
Compared to now, though, it's just incredible.
Mm-hmm. The facial expression that they get now, the movement of the characters, it's the detail of the background. It's absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. That's all you can say about it.
Well, I can definitely say that working with 343 on Halo has definitely not hurt Blur.
Nope. It most certainly has not.
I'm sure they've got them lined up at the door. Just as long as they make Halo a priority, we're all good.
There you go. There you go. So another thing to mention too about some of the Xbox stuff, because there's still a couple more things to mention on that before we go full-fledged Halo Wars. And we're probably not going to get to too much of the other news tonight. We might do a catch-up podcast this weekend to catch up on some of the other stuff, because there is actually quite a lot of additional information that's been released in this past week that has not been related to Halo Wars 2 or E3 that we need to get into. But one little feature that they did talk about from the services perspective is they're bringing background music back for those that are interested. I know that's not something that has been overly vocalized, but it has been vocalized by quite a few people from the Xbox community. So they're bringing that back, which is really cool. They also have on the, going back to the Slim stuff, there's a new IR blaster on the front to help you control your other multimedia devices.
So no Kinect required.
Right. You just have it from the console. And then there's also the new controller, which Godzilla mentioned a little bit earlier. But in addition to it being Bluetooth, you also can customize it. They have this Xbox Design Lab, and you can completely customize the colors of your controller, from the shell to the back to the battery cover to the thumbsticks to the D-pad. And there's even custom buttons. Like, it's very limited set, but there's custom ABXY buttons and view and menu buttons as well that you can put on this controller. And there's over 8 million color combinations that you can do with this designer. So you can get custom controllers for $79.99 straight from Xbox.
Now, they just need to do that with the Xbox Elite controllers.
I asked about that too.
And one other thing I would like to see them do is have a variety of styles of thumbsticks, not just colors.
Yeah, I asked about both of those actually during the Aaron Greenberg interview. So you'll actually get to hear him talk about that a little bit more. But
cool.
There's still... It's not the answer you want. It's the answer that you assume that they're going to give, which is they have that customizability specifically for the Elite, and they're still selling well on the Elite controller, so they're still going to be pushing that product, blah, 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 blah.
Well, I'm not saying they're not. It would be nice for that to come out.
Yes.
You know, the different thumbsticks, there are other options out there. You do have to void your warranty in order to do those, but there are other options out there that are not that expensive. So just wait until it's out of warranty and then change your thumbsticks. The whole custom color on the Elite controller, I know, you know, they don't want to do that because it's the Elite, you know, and everybody's mind, Elite means black and silver. So, and don't get me wrong, I love my Elite controller. I can't wait for them to get custom paddles out for it. I want my Halo paddles.
I mean, they're available now.
They are? Where?
They've been available for a long time. GameStop. They've been out for months.
That's why I don't have them. I don't go to GameStop.
Yeah, they've been out for months.
Well, shoot. I'm going to have to con somebody into going to GameStop for me.
They're still $50, which is ridiculously expensive for those things, but they're technically out there.
Yeah. Darn it. I was really hoping they were going to come to Amazon.
Nope.
And anyway.
Yep. Along with the custom controller thing, they do have a Gears of War themed Elite controller.
Mm-hmm.
Cue the Haas squeal again.
Yes. that was another time I heard that fate scream.
I'm sure Lindsay was probably going like, what the heck is going on with Colin?
Yeah.
It's like, are you okay?
So much for that gaming budget.
Right. It's like, can I get this controller? You've gotten two Xbox Ones already.
Please. He may have to sell one of his Xbox Ones to get
That's what I was thinking about, yeah. Halo 5 Xbox One, Gears of War controller. Which one do you want?
Where does your heart truly lie?
Or both of the Halo controllers, I guess. Which I still think we have a lock controller to give away at some point.
We gave mine away.
I think I still have an extra one. I'm not sure.
Well, I had another copy of the game, but it got given away.
I had an extra copy, but I gave it to a friend. So me he too. Could play. Yeah.
Sorry.
Anyways. Yeah, sorry, folks.
He begged, if it makes you feel any better.
Alrighty then.
I'm
trying to think what else there was specifically on the console or services side of things. I don't think there was.
Well, the one thing that they did stress is that all your hardware will work with all of the Xboxes. So if you buy yourself a custom controller, it's going to work with your Xbox One, your Xbox S, or Project Scorpio, whatever its name will be. The chat pads, headsets, all that. It's going to work on all the systems. So you know, just because you want to upgrade the system doesn't mean you have to buy all new controllers and hardware. You just have to buy the box. Was the Xbox S coming with a controller?
Yes.
I know they... Okay. Because I saw flashes that it wasn't. I'm like...
No, it's coming with the new controller, I believe.
That's good.
They kind of made it seem... Well, the way they advertised it made it seem like it was. Maybe not. I thought it was. I guess I didn't ask that specifically when I was talking to Aaron, but I don't know. If someone in the chat can look that up while we're talking, get some clarification on that. That is kind of important to know, I guess.
Yeah. Laird, it's not that I don't want to buy it online. I don't have a problem buying it online. I have a problem buying it from GameStop. Yeah, I think that pretty much covers all the hardware news and Xbox stuff as far as software side.
Right. So Halo Wars 2 stuff. So the beta... Yeah. The beta was happening this past week for those who probably... Well, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably played it. But we had Domination up for the first 3 days of the beta, and that which dropped Monday afternoon after the Xbox press conference, and it was supposed to originally end on Monday this past week on the 19th, the 20th, but they extended it to the 22nd. And then someone in the chat earlier said that Bravo put out a tweet last night and the team is testing something again today. So they extended it another day. So what was supposed to be a 7.5-day beta turned into a 10.5-day beta.
More playtime for us.
We got 3 extra days, people.
Hey, the
holla.
I am really impressed with the beta for the most part. You being someone that had played the original and played this one, they are similar in control schemes and stuff like that. Strategies are totally out the window from 1 to 2. The controls, I don't know about you, but I didn't find them as intuitive as I did the original.
Funny thing, I found them more intuitive than the original, except for the leader powers. It took me a while to figure out how to get to the leader powers, but I picked up those controls super quick. Super quick.
On the original control scheme, pretty much every button on the controller did something.
Yeah, same thing for this one, at least for me.
I guess I'm just still trying to figure out the controls. The one thing I would have liked to see is a little bit better explanation of the controls in their little tutorial. I mean, they give you the basics, which is fine, but it would have been nice if they'd at least put up a control diagram up there and kind of explained everything.
That's a good point.
I mean, there'd been some points where I had to ask the community, okay, how do you do this? Because I couldn't figure it out. Leader powers was one of them. I could get to the power tree, but I never could get it to show up. You get the power to show up in my circle menu.
Right.
I was able to find that out today.
So that was the one thing that I had problems finding was the leader powers. But other than that, I found everything else pretty easily. And I guess I did have an advantage because I had people from the creative assembly team like explaining to me before I started playing on preview night. So
that does tend to help if the game developer is describing how to play the game.
Just maybe.
That is a small advantage.
But regardless, I picked it up really quickly and I actually managed to win both of the games I played during preview night, which for those who don't know, they had Strongholds as the game mode that was playable at E3, and then the beta they had Domination and Deathmatch. So Strongholds was a game mode where you had, I think you started with 14 minutes and there were 7 strongholds on the map, and it was a contest to see who could hold the most strongholds at the end of the time. So the way the strongholds works in Halo Wars 2, it's a little bit different than it does work in Halo 5, but you fight to control these strongholds, and you have to be the team that is holding the most strongholds when the end of the game, or at the end of the game.
So were you limited to 14 units?
No, we were limited to 60 units apiece.
Okay. I was going to say that'd be a lot more challenging if you could only have 15 units.
And here's the other thing too. We were given unlimited resources. we started out with the max amount of units that you could have, maxed upgraded buildings, and 100,000 of power and supplies for the E3 build.
I wonder if that's part of the game mode or if that's just
so
for the build.
Apparently that's something that will be configurable in game options, is having that kind of, now I'm not sure if it's going to be to that extent, but talking with the creative assembly guys, that is something that you could configure as part of a stronghold game option.
Now that'd be cool. Custom Halo Wars.
Pretty game. Much is what it sounded like.
That's a nice addition. Now, did you play on Xbox or did you play on
both
PC?
Both the times I played on Xbox.
Did you watch any of the gameplay on PC?
The only PC gameplay I watched was during the campaign demo that they did. And honestly, it looks, the UI at this point is exactly the same. So you're not really seeing anything different other than that you see a mouse and you can click and drag to select units in a square instead of having the little round circular highlight thing. But I wanted to try to get a PC game, but they couldn't sneak me in on the last day to play, so
at least you tried.
I tried, but I didn't get it. Sorry, folks.
Yes, the jump pack roots are OP, Irikibu.
I don't think I saw any of those or really had the chance to run into any of those during my, at least like my...
I got annihilated by someone that had nothing but them. We both clashed with full armies and he flat just wiped the floor with
yikes.
Now, granted, I just had regular Marines, but they were fully upgraded and he just wiped me out. The funny thing is, and I noticed this when you played as Axion.
You mean Atriox?
Atriox, sorry.
This isn't Axios. This isn't this isn't Forward Unto Dawn.
Anyway, when you have foot unit
Marines,
foot grunts, units,
brutes.
Well, grunt brutes, squads. If you send them across the map, they
kick infantry
up a cloud of dust and disappear. Infantry, yes, they kick up a cloud of dust and almost vanish as they traverse across the map. You do the same thing with Marines. Yeah, you get a little dust, but they don't like disappear. I just thought that was an interesting twist.
What's the twist?
But, you know, you get a whole squad of vehicles and they don't kick up that much dust. It's just an interesting thing they did.
Huh. Quite interesting.
I mean, you know, as soon as they stop, the dust goes away. But it's just, it's kind of funny to watch them just, it's kind of like, stampede! That's kind of what it sounds like. You ever hear a stampede in a movie? that same noise. That was an interesting twist.
There you go.
But I played as both characters, with some exceptions. They got them pretty balanced. The flamethrowers are pretty powerful as well. They seem to be able to kill just about everything. Same with the jump pack brutes. They're very powerful units for what they are. Vehicles probably could be buffed a little bit. They seem to be a little weak right now. But like I said, it's a beta. It was probably more, you know, for them to get their balancing right than anything, and to, you know, test the servers and stuff like that. But overall, I'm pretty impressed with the beta. It was fun to play, which that's the most important thing for me, is that it was fun to play. I kind of like the two game modes that they put out there. The deathmatch. Deathmatch is not the same as it was in the original Halo Wars. In this deathmatch, you still have to gather resources. You still have to gather energy, which is that part. The gathering energy is different from the original Halo Wars. You actually have two resources you have to manage. You have to manage your supplies, and then you have to manage your energy, and different things cost different currencies. Is probably the best way.
Different combination of resources.
Some things, right? Some things will only cost resources. Some things will only cost energy. Some things will cost a little of both, or a lot of one and a little of another. So it brings in a whole new level of resource management when it comes to building your army. At first, I was not happy about it, but the more I played it, the easier it got to manage.
Okay.
And I realized that it took away a limitation that I had before. You know, before you build three reactors or four reactors and you were done.
Interesting.
But now you can spread that, you know, you can lose a reactor, but you lose your reactors on a base and not be out of the game. You can still build units, which that's a limitation of the original Halo Wars. If your opponent took out all your reactors, you couldn't build your high level units anymore. Once you upgrade and unlock those units, you can build them even if you have no reactors, as long as you still have energy left. Now, once your energy's gone, yes, you cannot build those units. But
so they actually do the tech tree a little bit different in Halo Wars 2. I mean, that's kind of what you're leaning towards, is the tech tree. And you have to upgrade your bases. And so instead of having the power tech from the generators, like you mentioned in Halo Wars 1, you upgrade your bases, and that gets you the additional tech level, which also allows you the additional research. And then with the additional tech level, then you can upgrade your barracks, your air pad, and your garage, and whatever the same thing is on the Covenant side. I forget what they're called. But until you upgrade that base, and it's a per base thing. It's not even a global thing. It's a per base setting. So once you upgrade that base, you unlock other research things, and then you have to do that to any other bases where you want to deploy those kinds of units out.
Well, no, your tech level is global. Once you reach tech level 3 or 5 or whatever on one base, that is your tech level. Your tech level is always your highest base. So if you got just a little side base upgraded all the way to tech level 5, then it's available at any of your bases.
But I thought you still have to upgrade the other bases in order to call those units out.
You have to upgrade the individual, you know, you have to upgrade the barracks, you have to upgrade the vehicle depot, you have to upgrade the air pad to get those to the higher level units.
Right. Yes. That's what I mean.
But yeah, once you have the tech level, I don't know if it's tied to losing the base, but the way it seemed to be, seems to me, is that once you've reached that tech level, you're there. You only have to upgrade one base to get to your high level tech. And then you can put a barracks or a vehicle depot on any other base and still do all your upgrades on that and produce the high level units, even though you haven't fully upgraded your base. Because a lot of the other bases are only 1 or 2 slots. They're not a full pad of.
Well, I'm always using those as supply slots.
Well, you can use those as supply. You can use them as barracks. Any base that you build, if you're human, you can build Marines out of.
And if you're Covenant, you build Grunts.
Right. Your main base, you can build your base unit, which is Marines or Grunts. You can build that right out of your main base. You can upgrade it right out of your main base. So you can start producing infantry right away, just like in the original Halo Wars. And they're not totally useless units. Now, I can't speak for the other leaders because we haven't seen them yet, but the Marines, they're pretty badass. And the Grunts aren't bad either. They can tear through some stuff if they're managed correctly.
Especially once you get the suicide Grunts.
I didn't play around with the Spartan much. I think you can only have 1 instead of 3 this time.
I think you can have more than 1.
Like I said, I didn't play around with it much. I know I built 1, but I don't ever remember going back to see if I could build another. Maybe I'll have to try that this when I get ready to play it again, if it's still running by the time I download this update. But the other thing is that you're, at least on the human side, your armory is where you build your special units. Is that what they called it?
Yeah, it's the armory.
Yeah, armory. That's where you build your Spartans. Now, there is a Covenant equivalent. I think they call it the War Council. War Council is what I believe they call it. And there is where you can build your Chieftain or whatever his title is. It's Brute Big Hammer.
Big Hammer.
And upgrade him. So you can only play as Drone. So.
What was that? Okay.
Sorry, I was reading the chat. Yeah, you can only build 1 Spartan
drone. Okay. Alrighty. I was not aware of that.
But anyway.
And now I know. I will say
it's interesting how.
Sorry, go ahead.
It's interesting how they broke the units up. Like in the original Halo Wars, if you played as human, you could build Warthogs right out of your main base. Now, on both sides, you can only build infantry out of your main base. No vehicles. So. I don't know if they're going to hold that true with the other leaders when they bring them in. If you're only going to be able to build infantry in your main base or what, but I think I like it. It makes the whole Warthog rush a little tougher. Not that I haven't seen it.
I've seen a lot of just infantry rushes, and that was something that people were actually complaining about quite a bit on the Waypoint forums when the beta was first out.
I can't say much because I'm guilty. I mean, on domination, that is the easiest way to win. It's just start pumping out Marines, capturing points, you know, get the points early, get them captured, because once you get to a certain point, there's just a deficit that it's really hard to overcome.
I will say it did feel like this beta was very susceptible to rushing. I agreed with that. It seems like there's still a lot more unit balance that needs to happen. And granted, this is only a beta, but it still feels like there's a lot of unit balance and balance of other mechanics that needs to happen.
I think it's more in resources, because the rate that you build resources determines how fast you can build units. That is the main factor. I mean, you always have the build time for each individual unit, but I think the cost of the units in, as far as in resources and in energy, I think they still need to play with that a little bit, especially since you can build Marines right out of any base. So you can capture a bunch of, you know, you capture small bases, which only cost like 500. They still only cost 500 resources,
which is actually quite a bit.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. But if you build one base and then build another base and put supply pads on it and then capture some of the power generators on the map, you can crank out Marines pretty quick.
Yeah. And if you're doing it from all your bases at the same time, and then like set a global waypoint.
Yeah.
That is quite a few to get going.
Yeah, I think I did one game of domination, and in I think under 5 minutes, I was full population without the upgrade.
Dang, dude. That's crazy.
So like I said, it's resources. You're getting the resources to come in at a rate that's not too slow, but not too fast.
Yeah, I always rush to try to get as many resources as possible, which might explain why I lost every time. Well, that, and I always got paired up 1v2 because my ally would leave. My beta experience was bad. My beta experience was honestly one of the worst.
I had several of those games. I had several of those games where it was 2v1 or 1v2. The 1v2 in domination, if it's played correctly, you can win. And I did win. One.
You're probably a lot better RTS player than I am, though.
No, it's luck. I just happened to get a couple of people that weren't that good at RTSs, or they probably was their first experience with Halo Wars of any type. So I had an advantage there. But yeah, there's more than one time where I'd get paired up and either one of the other team had quit, or one of my teammates quit, or they would just be there and not do anything. I'd go look at their base and they're their unit set right in front of the base, right where they spawned in.
Yay.
And there were some searching issues. It got better it's gotten better in the last day or so. I've been getting full games that, people have actually played the whole game. I've gotten some of the people multiple times, not just in the same day in the beta, to the point where I'm actually recognizing their gamer tags when they pop up. The overall, I'd give the beta a B. I liked the Halo 5 Guardians beta better, but that's kind of more in the type of game I like to play. The Halo Wars stuff is kind of just a goof-off game for me. So
for me, the beta, when I was playing Strongholds at E3 and I was playing with people, I had a lot of fun. When I was playing on my own, trying to match in and having my allies quit and pretty much have all except for one, literally one of my games played 1v2. Oh, I take that back. One I actually played with a friend, my one domination game I actually played with somebody. And then there was one other deathmatch game where it was 1v1. And I think I won and forced them to quit. But even that game wasn't fun. But other than those two, every game that I've played so far has come down to a one-on-two situation. So this beta for me was bad. Really bad.
I'm sorry that you had that bad of luck when it came to finding people to play with.
I mean, I had fun with Strongholds at E3. When I played it on my own, it was I didn't have fun. Even when it was 1v1 and I won, it wasn't fun. At least for me.
Well, they have released information that there will be a PC beta closer to launch. So I don't know if that means it's going to come back to Xbox One or not.
So from what I heard, the beta that's supposed to be coming out is going to be PC and Xbox at the same time. What has me worried, though, for the PC side of the thing is that they're starting on an Xbox platform for the RTS and then porting it to PC. And there's so many other things that RTSs on PCs do that if you start with a console port, you're not going to get the support for. And my worry is that you're going to have a lot of RTS players on the PC side want to try to come this out, and then they're going to be severely disappointed because 343 isn't making this game in the mindset of PC gamers, because they're not. I mean, I hate to say it, but this whole like hoorah of, hey, Halo Wars is coming to a PC, a platform where RTSs is actually designed to be on, they're not designing the game for to be a PC RTS. And when I
not unless they're totally revamping the controls for PC, which I don't
see. I mean, they're customizing the controls for it so you can have 10 control groups over 4 using the number keys on the keyboard. But even with that, you have, for RTS games, you have this whole kind of bottom menu thing. You have a lot of hotkeys. You have a lot of other options that you have with the mouse and keyboard. And from talking with Dan, I mean, no offense to him, but it doesn't seem like 343 knows what to do for a PC RTS game. It just doesn't. You can't just change it to make mouse and keyboard compatible with the game and say, here's an RTS that works on the PC. That's not going to do well in the RTS market for a PC.
That's true.
It's just not.
Well, all we can do is wait and see. You've seen a demo of the campaign on PC, but you know, there's still a lot of time left. So there's still a lot of changes that can be made. So we'll see when the PC beta comes out. And you know, you're right, Dust. The game is not designed to be on PC. The RTS players that play on PC probably will not like it. They probably will not like the lack of control that they have with the game. But until we get in front of our, you know, in our hands, you know.
I don't know. I mean, that's why I put the tweet out. I did, I think it was on Friday last week.
But also, the one thing, from what I've seen, and this is purely by observation, Halo Wars is not as complicated as current RTSs on PC. It's a simple game in comparison to the ones that I've seen on PC.
Yep, I would agree.
I mean, it's a very, very simplified version of an RTS. And you know, the mainstream RTS players probably aren't going to touch it anyway.
Which is kind of sad.
Because it won't ruin. They'll probably play a demo of it and to judge it, but I just don't think it will offer them the challenge that the current RTSs do.
I think it's just a suck up kiss to the Halo fan saying, hey, yeah, you can play this on PC. It's like, woohoo, Xbox players will be happy, but PC players are going to be like, what is this junk?
I agree with you, Dust, but I'm kind of holding my reservations until I actually see what they put on PC. From what I know about Halo Wars and what I've seen about other RTSs, it's not in competition with them. It's not on the same level as them. So I don't think it's going to draw the same. I don't think it would draw the same crowd as a PC RTS would anyway.
But
I got to see it.
The thing is, though, I see the potential there.
See the whole window.
It could be a great PC RTS because
it could be, but then it wouldn't be able to be played on.
They're console. Looking to make it on. First person shooters are a little bit easier to get by with because the controls are pretty much identical. For RTSs, it's native to PC. There is so much more you can do on a PC. Therefore, they should really be different builds to a significant degree. I mean, granted, you're going to have the same graphics, you're going to have the same story, you're going to have a lot of that same stuff, yada, yada, yada. But as far as controls and some other functionality, there should be a distinct difference between the Xbox One version and the PC version. And I don't think they have that in mind. I don't think they have the foresight, nor maybe just not the drive or the motivation to actually make a good PC version of it. And the thing is that, what's the studio that they're working with? Creative Assembly. They made Total War, which is a top RTS from what I understand. Granted, I haven't played it, but it's a good RTS. And to see what they're doing with Halo Wars 2, to see how console-centric the game is, and to see that console-centric mindset be ported to PC, there's just so much potential that they're just like saying nope to. At least that's what it feels like.
Yeah. Well, that's also the downside of the play anywhere aspect of their new philosophy. Some games should not be on consoles. Some games should only be on PC. It's they're trying to combine two separate ecosystems into one family. There's going to be things that get cut. The way to fix it is to have Halo Wars for PC and Halo Wars for console and keep the two environments separate.
So at launch, there's not going to be crossplay. They did say that they're going to be looking into doing crossplay down the road, but at launch, they're not going to have it.
But still, you're still, I'm guessing what I should say is they should be two totally separate games.
And they're not treating it that way. I feel that there's...
And they're not going to, because that's not their philosophy now. They want the, they want the play anywhere. That's their new goal. They set it in E3. All of their first party titles are going to be playable on Xbox and on
Windows 10. It's one thing to have them playable on both. It's another to go into the mindset of development where RTS is... are like they I don't know how other way to say this, but they rule on PC versus console. Like they are built for PC controls, whereas they're not really built on console, which I mean, let's give credit where credit is due. Halo Wars did a very good job bringing an RTS to the console. Did a good job, but
yes, they did.
You cannot go backwards in that. You can dumb down a PC RTS to a console, sure. You can't really do that the other way around. And I just think that their mindset going into this is not good. I feel like there's so more potential for this to actually get into the hands of some dedicated PC RTS players and get more sales. And they're just throwing that out the window.
Yes. Like I said, you haven't said anything I disagree with.
I know, I'm just ranting.
But I don't want to go into too much because I haven't played it yet and I don't have the RTS background to truly judge on it. But, I want to play the PC version. I want to see if it has a better control set than the console does, if it is easier to navigate, if, custom keys can be set, macros can be set, things like that. And until they release it, there's really not much I can say about it. It's probably not going to be a hit RTS with the PC RTS crowd.
Yeah. Anyways,
I'm really pumped about the story.
The story is going to be exciting. I did ask during the Halo Wars 2 campaign demo of because this takes place 28 years after the events of Halo Wars. The original, which puts it a year after mm-hmm. Halo 5. So I asked the question, are we going to see any ties in from the game into Halo Wars 2? And Dan's response was, that's a good question.
That does not surprise me.
That doesn't surprise me either.
That's a good question, but I ain't going right. to answer it.
Pretty much.
I do think that there'll be some tie-ins, especially with Hunters in the Dark.
Ooh.
As far as the external fiction.
Which I still haven't read.
Yes, you need to get off your butt and read it.
I've got so many other things to do, like conventions and... Ah.
You have flight time. Read.
I'm reading other stuff, and I'm playing Pokemon.
Well, put the Pokemon away, and read the books.
But it's Pokemon.
you do run a Halo community.
Yeah.
You may want to give it some attention.
I give it enough attention. It's called a weekly podcast. But yeah.
It's with the Hunters in the Dark and what they've released so far in the little teasers they put out. It's going to be an interesting story. I'm going to be really interested to see how much of it ties into Halo 5, if Cortana makes an appearance or is mentioned.
So, yeah, we'll have to see about that, because it seems like it was one of the things where there could be a tie-in, but there could equally not be a tie-in. I think the game would still be good from a story perspective.
Yes, I'm sure they will tell. Well, I'm hoping they will tell a good story, a more involved story than they did with Halo 5. I hope that when they actually start talking about the story of Halo Wars, that's what they deliver.
Yes, needs to be.
That is very important. Don't tell us one thing and then deliver something else.
Yep.
The graphics so far are looking amazing.
I would agree. Yep. It looks really, really good so far.
The little snippets of the campaign that they've put out there look really good. It's interesting, some of the dialogue in those, just the fact that you're hearing, I don't know which person you're actually playing as, if you're playing as the Chieftain or as Cutter.
What do you mean?
Because you hear the Chieftain talking, but you see, you would think you would be playing from the human side. So I don't know if maybe through the campaign you play both sides.
So is this like some video that you watched, or wait?
Yeah, they've got pieces of the campaign out, just a little short.
So
30 second
I know period. From the campaign demo that I watched, you were picking up communications from the other side.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. I mean, I have no context as to what was going on. So it's just a little blurb and then.
Yeah, I think it was because the campaign mission that we did was the very first campaign. You were basically Captain Cutter controlling your troops, and you could hear, like, as you were taking over their bases and eliminating their enemies, you intercepted radio traffic from them, of them calling in other units and stuff.
Well, that makes sense.
But it would be interesting if they did pull a Halo 2 type thing and you were playing both sides. That would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the one thing I'd like to learn more about this group or
the Banished.
What do they call them? The Banished.
Oh, we'll learn more.
They were fighting the Covenant. Why? And why are they fighting humans? That's what I really want to
know. They promised to say more.
Can it be February?
Yeah, right.
Like now? I'm looking forward to the campaign of Halo Wars. Maybe not so much the multiplayer, but I'm definitely looking forward to the campaign.
Agreed.
I never did the multiplayer on Halo Wars that much anyway. I mean, I got my general rank to get the achievement, and that was pretty much the end of my multiplayer.
Yeah, I still need to work on that.
Every once in a while, I'll jump in with some of my friends that still play Halo Wars.
Game Dude has volunteered to help me get my achievements, so hopefully.
I can help you.
Yay,
too.
More people to help.
If we can ever, get online at the same time.
That's going to be weekends.
Problem is you're usually online while I'm asleep.
We've got weekends. It'll just have to be something where we schedule the weekend. I'm so busy to the point now where I have to schedule things. It's bad. But that's just how busy I am, or how overcommitted I've been.
He needs a PDA for his PDA. Oh.
I need a clone. That's what I need.
Well, that is illegal. So
for now. Anyways, they did announce for the lost my train of thought there. Sorry, they did announce for the Halo Wars Collector's Edition and all the other stuff that the Collector's Edition. Is that what they called it? Ultimate Edition. Sorry, not Collector's Edition. Ultimate Edition. And there's also Season Pass and the Halo Wars Definitive Edition as well that comes with the Ultimate Edition. So this version of Halo Wars 2 is, I believe, it's digital. You can get digital and you can get physical as well, But it's going to, the Ultimate Edition is going to include the Halo Wars 2 Season Pass, which will give you additional DLC, which also spans more than 6 months of content, including leaders, abilities, multiplayer maps, new campaign scenarios as well. So a lot of stuff. It'll be available separately for $39.99, but you can get it as part of the Ultimate Edition for $79.99. Standard obviously is going to be $59.99 or $60. But with the Ultimate Edition, you also get Halo Wars 2 4 days early, so you can play before anyone else. You get the season pass, and then you also get the Halo Wars Definitive Edition, which is Halo Wars for Xbox One and Windows 10 PC. So you'll finally be able to play Halo Wars on PC.
I think they do that. I thought they were doing that with Halo Wars, period. You just buy a copy of Halo Wars and you get it on both.
I don't know if they said anything specific about the Halo Wars Definitive Edition being separate. Yeah, I think it's supposed to be separate, but I don't know if they've detailed that out yet.
Probably not.
So, I'm not sure. If someone in the chat knows, or if they know if something, someone's posted it somewhere, then let me know. But yeah, so the Halo Wars Definitive Edition will be an enhanced version running on Xbox One and Windows 10, which also features improved graphics, has additional achievements, and it will include both the historic battle map pack and the strategic operations pack. So all the DLC that came with Halo Wars, the original, will be part of this Definitive Edition that you'll get for Xbox One and Windows 10. And all this will be available on February 21st of next year. Yay!
Hey.
I will be getting the Ultimate Edition because that's what I do.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we do.
All the time. So I think that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. We're running long to begin with. So we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. We might do a catch-up episode to talk about some of the other news from this week, because there's new weapon skins from the HCS standpoint. So CLG and Evil Geniuses are getting their own weapon skins in the next update, the Warzone Firefight update, which has quite a bit of stuff in it, actually. If you've been following Halo today and yesterday, you probably have seen a lot of announcements for the next update coming. There's also some stuff happening at RTX next week. There's going to be Halo Wars 2 Strongholds playable there, along with an FFA tournament that's going to be there as well. And there's going to be a Halo panel that you can attend on Saturday. The Warzone Firefight release, going back to that real quick, features a new Forge canvas called Tidal. It's going to have the new campaign features that a lot of people have been asking for. Is going to have score attack, so you have the campaign scoring, and it also gives you a restart mission option, along with a few other things that some campaign speedrunners have been asking for, but they've probably moved on since then. Warzone Firefight is coming with some new bosses. They have that kind of giant mecha grunt robot that you can fight against. It's called Grunt Goblin. Grunt Goblin. Wow, that's a tongue twister. And you actually get, we finally get our UNSC aerial vehicle that we've been promised. It's the AV-49 Wasp. It's a UNSC VTOL aerial vehicle. So we finally got our aerial vehicle. They promised us that we were going to get one, and we finally did.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see how strong it is and how it compares against the Banshee and the Phaeton. Because apparently, from their description, it does have energy shields. Being an air vehicle, is lightly armored. It has rocket launcher and chin guns, so it could be interesting. It has a hover capability, so it's probably going to be pretty comparable to the Phaeton as far as how it moves around the battlefield. But
it looks like it's going to be a mix kind of the Hornet. Well, it looks more like a mix between the Hornet and the Phaeton. So it kind of feels like.
Yeah, it definitely.
There's new wrecks, mostly vehicle wrecks. Original Halo 2 Beam Rifle is coming back, along with variants to that. New Covenant vehicle variants, new plasma rifle variants, new armors, new emblems, and new arena maps, new Warzone maps, and a whole bunch of other things as well. So we'll cover that in another episode where we can dive into it a little more, because we've kind of expired some time here and we still have the interviews to attach to this podcast as well. So lots of stuff. But thank you guys for checking us out. Sorry we haven't been around for a couple weeks. We will probably not be doing a live show next week, just because I will be in a hotel and hotel internet usually sucks. So we might record a show. I think I won't be as busy on that Thursday, so we'll likely record the show, but we won't be doing it live. But lots of stuff from RTX that we'll be able to talk about, hopefully. Hopefully we can get some footage, more footage of Halo Wars strongholds. If you haven't checked out our YouTube, we actually did post the couple of stronghold games that I was able to play during the Xbox preview night. Both of them are wins. The second one, we actually skunked the other team. So we held all 7 stronghold positions. And then when you do that, you actually force the other team into like a sudden death type thing where they have a minute to capture one of the strongholds. And if they don't, they automatically lose. So yeah, check that out on our YouTube.
Nice.
Check out other social media as well. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and also on Twitch. We do our podcast normally on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern time on Twitch. And we do Fragment Fridays on Fridays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, hosted by the lovely Godzilla T. Also on YouTube, we...
Hey now, wait a minute. Lovely?
Why not lovely?
No. If you were a girl, that's okay. I have a problem.
The wonderful, the fabulous, the awesome, the...
There we go. That works. Sorry. I was just trying to make it funny.
So check that out. There's also the latest Achieving Halo up on our YouTube channel as well for Glast, the third Halo 5 mission. So make sure you go and check that out as well.
And if you want to be a part of it, hit me up on Twitter or on Xbox Live. You can get me on the Twitters. You can get me at Godzilla Todd on Twitter, and of course Godzilla Space T on Xbox Live.
Go have fun and participating. Also, make sure you check out our Halo Bowl recap. As of this recording, we actually recorded the show. It hasn't been released yet, but it will be released before this show. So make sure you go check that out, and the VOD will be up by that time as well. The replay that we had of the event from our Twitch stream. We ended up raising $1,686 for Gamers Outreach, and we actually had Zach Weigel, who is the founders of Gamers Outreach, on the show this week. So he came on and talked about what Gamers Outreach was, how it got started, what the money is going towards, and we also got to talk to Drunken Halo and Podcast Evolved, and we discussed our experience with the whole Halo Bowl tournament and kind of what the plans are for the future with that series going down the road. We'll likely see something in the winter. I think that's kind of the general consensus of where we're going with it, but this is Drunken Halo's baby that they've kind of born and are running, so we'll see where it goes from there. But this is definitely not the only one that's going to happen. This has been something that I think all the podcasts have really enjoyed. We would really love to get other communities involved with it as well, and overall we just had the blast. If you guys
It was
tough going up against Drunken Halo and just being kind of cold turkey. And we did put a fight up at the end, but it was just too little too late. But overall, had a great time. Yeah.
Hey, you made it to the finals. Can't complain.
I'm happy of our team. We had Dusk, Xander, Itanium, and Keys. So I'm very pleased with how we did. Yay. So make sure you check out that show, and make sure you check out the video on demand that will be up on our YouTube about the same time that that other show gets posted. So if you're hearing this after the fact, then it's already up. Make sure you check out our podcast network. We are part of the podcast, which is podka.st. Over there, you can find other gaming-related shows such as Critzcast, Work in Progress, Guardian Radio, The Learning Cliff, and How to Murder Time. And they're supposed to be... Critzcast was supposed to be breaking off their Overwatch discussions into a new podcast, but I haven't heard anything on that yet. I'm going to go over and check right now just in case. They have actually made that announcement, and it doesn't look like it's out yet. So I'll need to check up with them and see what they're doing about their whole Overwatch show. There's supposed to be one. I still haven't had a chance to play it yet, but there will be, hopefully, a podcast dedicated towards that. So make sure you check them out. Let them know that we sent you. And go support the network. It would be really awesome if you did. And it's also other good content to listen to. Everyone that's over on that network is very good at producing their podcasts, very good at speaking about the games that they're interested in. So if you're looking for some other podcasts just to listen to fill time, or if you're genuinely interested in the other games that they cover, then it's worth checking out. That will be it for tonight. Thanks everyone for tuning in again, whether you are tuning into us live on Twitch or downloading us through iTunes or some other podcast feed aggregator. We appreciate the support. If you're going to be in RTX next week, as of this recording, let us know. We will have Podtacular swag there to give away. I will mostly be hanging around the Griffball booth and the Griffball stage. So you can find me probably in either one of those two places. So make sure you come and find me, and I will give you some Podtacular swag, which includes shirts. I will have some Podtacular shirts, along with the wristbands, stickers, buttons, and actually, I think I'm out of lanyards, so no lanyards. I need to order some more. Anyways, thanks everyone for tuning in. We will catch you on the flip side. Keep on fragging E3. Hey listeners, Dustrum here after the show. Just wanted to let you guys know that because of the length of the show, we decided to go ahead and keep the interviews separate outside of the podcast. And you can find those on the website, or you can go ahead and find those in the podcast feed, however you subscribe to the podcast. So please check there in order to find the interviews.